Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Beans rallied 16 cents this week, and still some say the burden is too heavy. Will they fade? We'll try to find out today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Jackie Vakes of the Stewart Peterson Group. Our panelists today are Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, and Brian Chastain of MarketWise in Farmer City, Illinois. Let's open today's discussion with this question. It seems to me we're playing a bit of a cat and mouse game with the beans. The technicians just can't wait for the thing to break to the upside, but the fundamentalists can't seem to see past that carryout that keeps growing and growing and growing and growing. Now, we did break on the daily chart this week to the upside, but that's not duplicated in the monthly chart. So the question is this: which direction is the long-term trend for the beans? We'll start with you, Paul Cooley.
Well, Todd, I wanted to share that these comments we'll be making today are my views and not necessarily ADM or ADM investors, but my particular view is that the trend is down right now from a technical point of view, and, you know, from a fundamental point of view, it's still down. It is a scary ride in here for anyone that is short the marketplace because he sees this overwhelming bullish enthusiasm in the marketplace. Well, one short-term idea is that if we do start to get rains in the United States here, it might put some kind of a temporary cap on things. But as you say, it is a scary trade right now.
Pete Manhart?
I think that we're just in a trading range. It's about a 30, 35-cent range. A couple of days ago, we made almost the whole range in one day, but you get around 630 on the new crop. That's been a kind of there to a little higher a barrier, and you get down close to six, and that's been just back and forth. One day we're going to break through it, but we haven't done that in the last month.
And Brian Chastain.
Oh, I guess I would look at the fact that we've traded in a $5.60 to $6 range on nearby for so long that seems to be the sharply sideways type action. But longer term, I'd have to agree with Paul that the market's been buoyed up here on Chinese rumors of buying the bird fear flus and uncertainty about demand. If for some reason we ever see a change in those attitudes, when we've had comparable stocks in historical years, we've seen a lot lower price levels, and that's my fear, that there's that risk out there that people may not be addressing.
Brian, let's stay with the bird flu just a bit. Is this thing a done deal and worked into the market, or are there other things we need to be aware of with bean meal, for instance? And by the way, that finished the week lower than last Friday's close, though it sure felt as if the bean meal rallied for this week. So is bird flu done deal?
No, I think it'll be a lingering thing. There's just too much health concerns and food concerns, and it's just something we're going to have to deal with. Longer term, the meal has probably more going to have to deal with the DDG issues coming from the ethanol production than it is going to have to deal with a change in demand, because people are going to eat and they like protein, so there's going to be a demand for that eventually. But like I say, meals are going to have to compete with the DDGs.
FAPRI, the Food Ag Policy Research Institute out of Missouri, released some figures this week. Expectations there are for 80 million acres of corn to be planted in the U.S., 73.2 million acres of soybeans. Last year, USDA said 72.1 million acres of beans were put into the ground and about 82 million acres of corn. So the FAPRI numbers show a 2 million acre drop in the corn and a million acre increase in the beans. That sound about right to you, Paul Cooley?
Let's see, a million acres less corn and about 2.5 million acres less beans. Is that what you said?
2 million acre drop in the corn and a million acre increase in the beans.
Okay. Well, I think we're going to see more bean acres than that, Todd. I'm I'm in the opinion that we could see, you know, 2+ million, 2.5 million acres more beans, and I think something like 1 million acres, you know, less corn, 1.5 million. You know, what we're basically looking at is, of course, the Collins basically, during his Ag Economic Outlook in Washington, basically set the tone with encouraging more corn acres and reducing some bean acres, you know, just through economic jawboning, if nothing else. But what we are finding is at our these meetings throughout the Midwest here, that there is this basic perception with insurance, with the farm program, and historic grossing the most dollars, there is this need of planting corn to make the most bucks. And boy, we see that theme, and I will question whether there's really a big shift. Weather is still the most important item if it's too wet to make that big change.
Repeat what you said. Where do you think the corn acreage will be?
I think the corn acreage will be down about 1 million acres, but it's not going to be the 2.5 million acres that some of Informa and things like that. The corn acres will be a little smaller.
I would agree that the corn acres will be a little smaller, but I don't think they'll be as much as two smaller. I just think I've got guys that are pushing all their pencils and looking at 260 corn and above, and are saying, hey, with the just what Paul said, with the insurance program and what I can do with the 180 bushel, I'm going to plant more corn acres instead of more bean acres in the Midwest.
Brian, maybe we better check on you with this one as well. You think there'll be more corn acres?
No, we're thinking less.
Fewer corn acres, but not as – I'm sorry. Yeah. Fewer corn acres, but not as
– Only a million,
a million or not the 2.5 that a lot of people are thinking about.
Oh, I think there's probably a likelihood that we'll see some switch, but people are creatures of habit. And they like their corn and bean rotation. It works for them. So to see a dramatic shift, I really don't expect that to happen. In fact, I had a conversation today with the agronomist at a soybean production plant, and they're seeing their units up and their planted acres up, but that's more from a market share gain. And, in fact, a couple of his growers are actually going and planting 90% corn this year instead of their more typical 50-50 rotation. So we'll see some adjustment, but I don't expect anything super major.
My understanding is you deal a great deal with options. Is this correct, Brian?
Yes.
And what are you telling producers at this point about using options for both the corn and the bean market?
I think at these types of price levels, a producer has to have some sort of protection in place. I mean, you look at Dease corn, only 15% of the time do we expire Dease corn above 260. You look at our stock situation, it's projected this year 2.1, 1.7. Given a normal crop, and granted that's a big if, but you just have to go back to last year. We had the same type of stocks numbers projected, 1.8, 1.9, 2.1, and we saw these corn trade under $2. So for a guy that does nothing, that's a substantial amount of risk. And to me, the same thing holds true on beans. You look at an ending stocks right now projected from the early USDA baseline of 555 million bushels. Historically, when we've had we've never had this type of a projected absolute ending stocks levels, and you know, beans have, assuming the normal crop ultimately is realized, beans have to be way overpriced. I mean, a year ago we had comparable stocks, 450, 500, and we flirted with loan, which is more than a buck below where we are right now.
You say way overpriced, yet if you look at the bean market this week, the March contract had a high of 594. Their low was at 72.5. They were up 16 cents in the nearby March.
Yeah, and I guess when I say overpriced, I'm referring more to harvest economics, Todd. You look back at baseline studies that show prices with projected stocks at this time of the year, yeah, we're probably pretty fairly priced. But like I say, if we ultimately realize a new crop, and my concern with that is, you know, it comes back to your question about the options. The guys need to be doing something to put a floor in place just in case.
Okay, so the March contract finished at 593.25 this week. It was up 16, and the new crop, which is what you're talking about, at 627.5, was up 13.5 for the week. So how do you play it out so that they get that in place?
I've been looking at $6 puts and some $6.520 put spread. I'm sorry, 625.20. I'm willing to sell that 520 put, capture the premium, because if the market goes down to 520, below there, the loan will become my protection. So I've got a $1 window for about a 40-cent out-of-pocket cost. That locks me in a minimum that's 60 cents above loan and leaves all the upside open.
Well, one of the things that, Todd, this is a number one asked question. We get about 35 to 50 phone calls just before the market opens from 6 a.m. till about 9:30. on this very subject. And, you know, everybody realizes that the fundamentals are extremely bearish. There is that continuing watching in the rearview mirror is something very ominous called a price rally here that will catch everybody by surprise. You know, we do have some very big fundamental reasons and some technical reasons why soybeans should be lower. But as you pointed out, the commodity funds are very, very strong buyers. Soybean oil rallies when there's major problems in soybean oil demand. So, you know, it's a very interesting market to play out. Now, what I think Pete and I are hoping is that sometime in here in the next 30, 35 days, when we see South American beans coming on the marketplace, we can rest a little easier.
Speaking of that, Pete, what have you heard about the South American bean crop? Is it going to make 58 million metric tons?
I don't know if it'll make 58, but from what I've heard and read, example Freeze Notice said today, if you read them, that the only thing that was going to hurt the South American crop from here on out would be a flood that would raise the ark. And that's basically what they said. They said it will be a record crop. They said Argentina is looking at 40. They're looking at 56 to 58 in Brazil. And that, you know, people don't realize that it's that good down there.
Well, that good is in comparison certainly to the last couple of years when we were talking, what, at 48 million metric tons, 52 million metric tons.
And then, remember, those were records then.
Yeah.
So this will be a bigger record.
They were short crops in records, actually.
Right.
And so this is a big bean crop that's coming on board.
You know, a year from now to maybe 2 years, we are going to be experiencing a wonderful experience of biodiesel and soy diesel, as a major market factor. But when we add all this up is that we have to be somewhat comfortable with some of these trend following systems and commodity fundamentals. But we still have a long time to go, and the weather isn't really cooperating in some parts of the United States that I think is an underlying keeping the market somewhat friendly.
Okay, so bottom line, over the next 3 months, what's your projection for the price of beans? We'll start with you, Paul Cooley.
Well, I think they'll be 30 to 35 cents lower, and with this weather forecast that, you know, I noticed Greg Soye in some of the people were putting out today. It is a little wetter this coming next 10 days to 2 weeks here in the U.S.
Pete Manhart?
I'm still looking at that wide range we've been looking at for the last month to 2 months, at that old high on the new crop at 648 and a low somewhere in the 545. So 550 to 650 with the prejudice towards the downside.
And Brian?
Oh, it's hard for me to put a price on it. I guess I would agree with Paul's comment regarding hopefully we get a little bit more upside opportunity here. I do know that historically the early March time frame has been very, very good for the markets. For example, in corn, the last 6 of the last 9 years, we've rallied the first 15 days or so of March, and on beans, it's been 10 of the last 15 years. So I would encourage people to still have stuff out there to be thinking about that opportunity if we do get a pop, and also using hopefully a pop over the next 15 to 30 days to get some stuff locked in for next year for fall.
From the grains floor in Chicago, oats finished the March contract down 6.5 cents this week at $1.83. The wheat futures finished the March with a high of 378, a low at 359. They were up 5.25 for the week at 373.5. July futures at 396 were up 6.25. Corn pit March contract 229.5, the high, the low at 222.5. Their settlement price a penny higher at 228.75, and December corn at 265.5 was up a penny and a quarter. The technicians, of course, looking this week at what they termed as a friendly, at least, mark, which was an outside up day when we had that. I think that was Thursday of this week. What'd you make of that day trade, and does it really mean anything in the long run for you?
Well, I think that corn is just in a grinding upward mood right now because of the good usage, because of China, and because of the dry weather in the Midwest. And, you know, we're taking 3 steps up and 1 back, 2 steps up and 1 back. Right now, at 260 looks like a base for right now going into these first 15 days of March. I've got guys saying they've got goals of 270 and 275. I've heard people saying with any weather scare we could approach that magical $3 this summer. But right here nearby, we're still looking at a nickel to a dime higher, I think, in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Ethanol demand going to drive December corn above 270?
Oh, we sure hope so, Todd, for more reasons than not. But I think the big factor here is that anybody that is following a marketing service, anybody that's paying good bucks to watch one probably has a loss in their hedge corn. And that's leaving a cold chill in anybody's back and back pocket, you know, with this trend that is higher. We are looking, however, at a big carryover, 2.3 billion bushels of corn at the end of this year here. And that's a big carryover. The basis levels would say, oh, gee whiz, you know, there's nothing as far as nearby demand that's going to scare the market. But the weather and also this thing called energy, crude oil, and every time we watch television, there's another crisis somewhere in either the oil patch or some of the Arabian countries that has the market very concerned.
All right, I can't let that pass. Where are you on your corn sales, new crop?
Well, you know, as far as a trend-following system, you'd say zero, but several of the clients are, you know, hedged at higher levels.
And, Brian, how about you?
We've got 20% sold outright at historically profitable levels. We've got another 30% covered with the options to leave the upside open. Just real concerned about the risk of the downside if we see a normal crop, but at the same time do recognize the weather issues and the possibilities. So we're really not willing to cap too much more than 20% right here and keep the rest of it open, but we do want to take advantage of rallies.
Pete, how is the corn market, because of ethanol and demand, different than the bean market is as you look at the fundamentals and the burden and the supply side of the market? Both are looking at fairly large Indian stocks.
Well, you know, if you look at corn carryout, if we would have a 129 bushel average like we had 3 years ago, our carryout would be 380 million. If we have a 165 or whatever it was a couple of years ago, we're going to be back over the two. But we really need a billion four to be comfortable, I think, in carryout. Once you get below the billion, I think it makes people uncomfortable and helps raise prices. So it still is, what kind of a crop are we going to have? And that will play a lot of it. And the weather right now, I think, is one of the big things besides China helping hold this corn up. And I do look for early March to push it a little higher.
Mercantile Exchange numbers, live cattle, April contract, a high this week of $90.32.5, the low at $85.95. April's the new lead option month at $86.02.5 on their settlement price. They were off $4.05 from last Friday's settlement, in the lead option, that is. The March contract at $106.32.5, up 12.5 cents. Lean hogs April contract $63.25 on the high, the low at $61.10. And the April settled at $62 even. They were up 57.5 cents. And the bellies finished at $89.42.5. They were up 115. Let's come back to bird flu very quickly, Paul. Is this going to have a longer-term impact in the meat markets?
Well, you know, one of the things that that happens here, of course, is that the consumers are watching things very closely if the country's affected. One of the things here is that it's business as usual in the United States and in all, you know, the pork, the beef, and the poultry. So consumption should be good, and we all know that there's abundance of these good quality meats, and they're at some pretty cheap prices.
When we return, we'll talk with Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson Group out of Wisconsin.
I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Temperatures in February were right at normal, 30.2 degrees. While most of the month was warmer than average, the period of February 18th to the 20th was over 20 degrees below normal. Statewide, February precipitation was only 49% of average, 0.94 inches compared to a normal of 1.93 inches. As a result, this was the 15th driest February on record since 1895. Except for southern Illinois, most of the state was well below normal on snowfall. Grayville, along the I-64 interstate near the Illinois-Indiana border, reported the most snow of any site in the state, 8.9 inches. Amounts of 0 to 4 inches were more common throughout the state. After showing some recovery in January, soil moisture levels have deteriorated in February. Many locations in central and northern Illinois are at about 75% of normal in the top 40 inches of soil. Soil moisture amounts are much below normal in the deeper layers. It is unlikely that these deeper layers will recover in time for the 2006 growing season. Only southern Illinois appears to be near normal for soil moisture at this point. Forecast from the National Weather Service shows cool and dry conditions prevailing for the next 7 days, with highs in the low 40s and lows in the 20s. However, above normal temperatures and precipitation are expected to occur during the March 10th through 16th time period. For the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign, I'm Jim Angel.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Commodity Week program here on WILL AM 580. Joining us today from Stuart Peterson Group in West Bend, Wisconsin, is Senior Market Advisor Jackie Vanks. She's our guest, and she writes an article for Successful Farmer and the Stuart Peterson websites, as well as the Outlook page in the Top Producer magazine. Jackie, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
You know, you do a great deal of risk management education. Let's start with this question. The working numbers are in for crop insurance. They're $2.59 for corn, $6.18 for soybeans. It means premiums will be higher for all products. Do they change how farmers should view their risk management choice?
Boy, you had to hit me with the hardest question there is right there.
Well, that's what we do. Did you take that? They were in just today, too, so if you,
right.
Which is Friday. So if you haven't had a time really
to I haven't even had time to think about it. I guess the thing that I like to impress on farmers when we're talking about risk management is you know, they need to focus on 100% of the crop. And if you're 20% hedged at 250, you know, the market's at 260, you still have a 258 average. But if you're 20% hedged and the market's at 240, you get a 242 average. So I think it's important that when you're looking at risk management, you're weighing the effect on the entire crop. I'm sorry, but I can't answer that on the crop insurance.
Well, we'll see if we can get Gary Schnitke to help us out on Tuesday. You'll be here at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana with us Tuesday, right?
That's right.
Excellent. So we'll have you there, and Gary Schnitke will be presenting the FarmDoc website's side of this program. And we'll put Gary's programming content. I recorded about 11 minutes with him Friday morning on this issue, and that'll go in our weekend newsletter, which you can sign up for on our website at willag.org.
Jackie, it's always nice to talk to you. I think we had a nice visit down in Amarillo at the company meeting down there, and you and Pete were visitors down there as well. I think. Well, the question I have is, of course, is the state of agriculture here in the U.S., and of course, you're in a big producing area, too, in Wisconsin. What's the attitude of the farmer out there when he talks to you, and how much corn and soybeans does he still have left to market on this old crop stuff?
Well, I think that we've seen more activity this year as far as rewarding rallies, and it's slowing down a little bit because each time that it rallies back, of course, they regret that they sold earlier. I still don't think they're making a mistake doing that. Attitude of the farmer, I have found the attitude to be very positive. In the majority of places, I mean, you know, the thing that's confusing is cheering for 50-cent LDPs. I mean, you know, I'm always somewhat confused by that. But we know that the way the farm program is set up currently, we really do make more money when we produce more of a crop and we have a lower price. And so, to go back to your question, Paul, I think that in general the attitude's good.
I have a question for you here. Where would you be on new crop sales on corn, and what would you do for hedges? How far hedged would you be now on that new crop corn as far as straight hedges?
Straight hedges?
Options, you name it.
I'm using options more than anything else, just because I believe that there is upside potential. The type of strategies that I've been using, I've used a little more complex option strategies. I've been buying 260 puts. And selling 2 3-20 calls against it. I did some research looking back from January of 2000, you know, right up to today. And basically, when you want to go back and you want to look at that, you look at the 260 range. You know, we've traded below that 85% of the time, so I think that there's good reason to have protection there. And you get up here and look at the 3-20 range, and we traded below that 99.2% of the time. So even if we do come close to it, I always tell guys, cheer for margin calls. Because nobody's going to be hedging 100% of their crop. And so we're seeing great appreciation in the value of the crop as this price goes higher, and yet we still run the risk. We remember it isn't that long ago. We hit $3.42 and ended the year at $1.95.
Brian, does this trigger a question in your mind for Jackie?
Yeah, it does, Jackie. One of the things we saw last year was a lot of producers used HTAs, and we kind of got caught blindsided because come fall with the old crop that was hanging around that ultimately ended up having to move into the pipelines with elevators filling bunkers of old crop before the combines ever started to roll.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a lot of them, too many in my mind, using HTAs again this year. I'm concerned about the same potential scenario developing. What are your thoughts?
Oh, Brian, I'm scared to death, to be honest with you, and we now have the new animal out here called the accumulator contract, which started last year and is now, you know, really catching on in a lot of places. And so one of the things that I constantly talk to people about is their basis and how important it is to be following basis, doing basis contracts more than HTAs a lot of times.
Right.
You know, you can do a basis contract and fix your price here in the futures if you want to.
Yeah, my only concern with basis contracts is all too often it seems like the producer puts a basis contract on, doesn't fix price, feels like he's done something, then he has, but all he's done is lock basis in, and then he kind of gets caught with a price drop in the fall like you mentioned there.
Well, there's no question about that, and I mean, that's something that has to be managed. So I think that one of the things that we're up against this year in some respects is I don't know how many of you are experiencing accumulator contracts in Illinois, but we're certainly seeing them pop up all over Iowa and everywhere else. And, you know, in that accumulator contract, they have to give them double the bushels if it's above a certain price. And you could be in a position where you produce 100,000 and be required to deliver 150,000. And to me, that is a very questionable position to put a farmer into.
Right.
Jackie, what's your feeling as far as market? What has the farmer done as far as marketing the old crop corn and old crop beans in percentage-wise from your perspective?
Well, I think that when you look at it certainly depends upon what your location is in the United States. We had such abundant crops in the Minnesota and the northern Iowa area that their percentage of sales are certainly lower because they had a great deal more than they've ever experienced in their lives. And so I'd have to say that the majority of people probably still sitting on 40%, you know, up in that area, and that's probably, for some guys, they're sitting on a lot more than that. But they've been more aggressive sellers coming into this year than what we've seen in the last couple of years. And I think it's primarily because of the basis issue that happened to them last year. Just like Brian said, they went into these HTAs and found themselves with just the most hideous basis they've ever seen.
Jackie, we appreciate you being with us today and look forward to seeing you on Tuesday.
You bet. Thank you very much.
Jackie Vakes is with the Stuart Peterson Group, and she's headquartered in West Bend, Wisconsin. A quick final word from Brian Chastain.
I think producers need to realize where we are in terms of long-term price levels and the profitability that's offered, and maybe not so much the profitability, but the risk of doing nothing, and utilize some option strategies to keep the floor in place and yet keep the upside open, because there is still really the big weather issue. What if we get something like an 88 or an 83?
Pete Manhart?
I think we should still be looking to sell beans on bounces and put those strategies on the corn underneath to prop it up. And remember this, that 15% over 260 and 99% under 320. Remember those numbers because, hey, it's time to protect it when it gets in those areas.
And Paul Cooley.
Tip of the hat to Pete and Jackie, and also I'm going to give away a Cracker Barrel rocker on Tuesday, so be there.
At the Beef House in Cummington, Indiana. Thanks, gentlemen and ladies. We appreciate it. And we'll see everybody Tuesday at the Beef House in Cummington, Indiana.
Commodity Week is made by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. On the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.